Both cases submitted. We'll have a decision out within the statutory timeframe. Our next case this morning is case AMA 18-0878, State of Minnesota versus Brendan Scott Vagel. And counsel, each of you will have 15 minutes for argument, and counsel for appellant, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it. So counsel for appellant, whenever you're ready, you can go ahead and get yourself adjusted at the podium, and then just state your name and the party you represent for the record.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Ariel Wagner at Lockridge Grindle-Nowen. I represent the appellant Brendan Vagel as a pro bono attorney through the Minnesota Appellate Public Defender Office. This case involves a narcotic dog sniff, which was the primary support for a warrant to search appellant's apartment. I'm going to concentrate on two issues in this case. First, the dog sniff in this case was not proper because police lacked reasonable suspicion of criminal activity. The warrant application was primarily supported by information that came from a confidential informant, which is not enough to justify the search. This argument was not waived below, and because there was no reasonable suspicion to support the dog sniff, the warrant was not justified, and the evidence obtained from the search should be suppressed. Second, the ion scan cannot support the warrant because the ion scan is a search that must be supported by probable cause. The facts here do not support probable cause to conduct the ion scan, and the evidence obtained from the search should be suppressed. So, first, a dog sniff is a search that requires reasonable suspicion of criminal activity. This requires specific and articulable facts that justify the search. The warrant application indicates that police obtained information that connected appellant to drug possession and activity, but this was not supported by a reliable source. The warrant application said nothing of the source of this information beyond that it came from a confidential informant. This is different from a reliable confidential informant, which is a term of art meaning that the person has proven reliable in the past. A tip can only be relied upon if there is those sufficient indicia of reliability, and here there is nothing in the warrant suggesting the confidential informant was credible or reliable.
Counsel, I'm having a hard time seeing how the facts of this case are different from those in Edstrom, in which the Supreme Court said that the tip in that case was adequately corroborated and established reasonable suspicion of criminal activity justifying the dog sniff.
So I have two things to say to that. First, I will say the Minnesota Supreme Court did err by not following Supreme Court precedent in Jardines when it held that the dog sniff in the hallway at an apartment door was not a search.
So noted.
Yes. But more to the point, I think it is different from Edstrom because they did not argue that the confidential informant had sufficient indicia of reliability. It was a conclusory statement, and they didn't.
Right, and I appreciate that the Supreme Court said Edstrom concedes there was reasonable articulable suspicion, and we agree. But those words have some meaning because the Supreme Court could have said, we assume without concluding something to indicate that they weren't actually making a decision that there was reasonable articulable suspicion. I read the line, he argues or he concedes there was reasonable suspicion and we agree to mean that the Supreme Court agreed. It made a decision on the merits that there was reasonable articulable suspicion. And you can see in its recitation of the facts regarding what the confidential informant told the police and what the police did to corroborate that tip, that the Supreme Court considered and decided that issue.
I think the facts here are similar to State v. Weicker, which came out after the Edstrom decision, where they analyzed whether the confidential informant...
But in Weicker, there was no corroboration whatsoever. The difference in Weicker is we didn't have a statement that we had a confidential informant, and we didn't have a recitation of things that were done to corroborate the details of the informant's tip. Now, admittedly, the things that were corroborated weren't necessarily indicative of criminal activity. It's like, where did he live? What did he drive? The car was parked there. His name's on the mailbox. We confirm he lived there. But in Edstrom, the Supreme Court seemed to accept that for the purposes of a dog sniff, that was adequate corroboration. And Edstrom, of course, is Supreme Court precedent, whereas Weicker is an unpublished opinion and not binding, plus pretty distinguishable because, as we pointed out, we knew nothing about who provided this information to one police officer who provided it to another.
I think you hit it precisely on the point there that the corroboration did not have any connection to the criminal activity. And I think that is different from Edstrom, where we don't know what the corroboration
was. Well, actually, in Edstrom, the Supreme Court told us exactly what it was. The case says, confidential informant told police that Edstrom was selling methamphetamine out of a Brooklyn Park apartment building. Informant also said that Edstrom lived on the third floor, drove a black Cadillac. Informant had seen Edstrom with a pistol in the past 3 months. Police showed informant a photo of Edstrom, and the informant confirmed that the man in the photo was a man selling meth. Police corroborated the informant's tip. Specifically, they used vehicle registration records to confirm that Edstrom owned a black Cadillac. They determined the license plate number that belonged to the Cadillac, saw the Cadillac in the parking lot of the building that the informant had described. When they reviewed the resident directory for that building, they learned that a person named Edstrom had listed as an emergency contact, lived in apartment 305. I mean, so in a lot of ways, we know what the corroboration was in Edstrom. The corroboration here is arguably stronger because in our case, the police actually corroborated not that appellant was listed as emergency contact for someone in the building, but appellant lived there, the apartment he lived in, that there'd been prior police calls, there'd been prior suspicion of drug activity. His car was parked there. Both cases, they showed the informant a photograph and said, is this the man? I'm having a hard time getting around the factual comparison to Edstrom.
I do understand that. I think it's just that they did not argue that that was not enough for reasonable suspicion in Edstrom. They didn't make the direct connection to criminal activity argument.
I agree, but... I mean, the Supreme Court, as this court, is obligated to decide cases in accordance with law. It's a de novo decision, and when the Supreme Court says we agree there was reasonable suspicion, we presume that the Supreme Court is considering the law that governs that decision. And the case law outside of the context of dog sniff cases does say that corroboration of even minor details can have some value, even if it's not criminal activity. The preference would be corroboration of criminal activity. Let me ask you this. If the Supreme Court has essentially set the bar pretty low for reasonable articulable suspicion in the context of a dog sniff, is it justifiable?
I mean, I understand that it is a lower threshold, but it still has to have those specific and articulable facts.
But what I'm suggesting and I'm wondering is whether, you know, the Supreme Court could have said dog sniff is not a search. Just go ahead and do it. They provided some protection to citizens by saying, well, it is a search, but we're not going to require probable cause, which is normally required. We're going to require reasonable articulable suspicion, so a lower standard. I wonder if an application, they've actually taken the reasonable suspicion standard and even lowered it a little bit more for this type of activity, because it does seem that this is pretty slim in Edstrom, but when we look at Fourth Amendment analysis, we often do a balancing test and look at the government intrusion versus the interest at stake. And I'm just wondering, you know, if I get stopped walking down the street or stopped driving my car, you need reasonable articulable suspicion. If you take a dog outside of my apartment door and I'm not home, there's no interference with my liberty at all, well, maybe it's okay that the reasonable suspicion showing is a little less than you would need to stop me while I'm driving my car. Does that make any sense?
It makes some sense to me, but Edstrom did uphold the State v. Davis decision with the normal, reasonable suspicion of criminal activity standard.
Okay, but then Edstrom said that standard was satisfied in that case.
Yes, it did, but it did not explore whether the confidential informant was reliable or not.
Well, they did, because we have to agree that one way of establishing reliability is to corroborate the information in the informant's tip, and the Supreme Court discussed the tip and the level of corroboration.
I mean, it did, like in this case, there was that corroboration, which was, you know, addresses, appearances, stuff like that. It was not corroboration that was connected to any criminal activity, and they did not argue that should be the standard in Edstrom.
The Supreme Court were saying they didn't consider it. I mean, they got a full section of the opinion devoted to I take that back. Maybe it's not so much. I'm looking for the language you're relying on. Oh, here we go. Police were lawfully present in the hallway, which is a Davis requirement, and there doesn't seem to be any dispute of that here. Moreover, Edstrom concedes, and we agree, that the police had a reasonable articulable suspicion of criminal activity when they conducted the dog sniff search. Davis is satisfied. I mean, I don't know how we'd look at this opinion and say the Supreme Court really didn't consider the reasonable articulable suspicion issue.
I mean, they did consider the reasonable and suspicion issue, but they did not explore whether the confidential informant was reliable or credible. The parties did not dispute that. So in Enstrom, it was sort of conceded that the confidential informant was reliable or credible. And here, there was just no information about the confidential informant. It just said that a confidential informant made a statement.
Well, could you talk a little bit about that? Is it ion scan? Do we have any precedent in Minnesota indicating whether or not that would constitute a search?
We do not have Minnesota precedent, but other jurisdictions have held that the swab of a door handle is a search that requires probable cause. But even if it doesn't, it still needs reasonable suspicion. And, you know, for the same reasons why the dog sniff did not have reasonable suspicion, the ion scan also did not have reasonable suspicion.
Do you think the doorknob is different than the area outside of the front door?
I believe, and other jurisdictions tend to agree, that the area outside of a door handle is the same as the curtilage as right outside the door in Jardine's. So that would be the...
Well, just thinking about it, I mean, sort of the reasoning, as I understand it, of Edstrom and the cases that preceded are that, well, this is a common hallway. It's open to public, or maybe not. It's at least open to other residents, so they could be walking by. They could be in this area. It seems to be a different question as to whether those people could touch my doorknob. I mean, you really shouldn't be touching a doorknob unless you're entering the apartment. So it seems an argument could be made that a doorknob is very different than the area outside of the door, which one might pass. And really, yeah, the only person that should be touching the doorknob is someone who has been invited in.
Yes, I would agree with that. And the cases outside of this jurisdiction have also agreed that it is a search that requires probable cause. So regarding the reasonable suspicion argument, I want to state that the argument was not foreclosed. We did argue below that the confidential informant had no record of reliability in both the hearing at the district court and in the motion to suppress brief. the court mentioned reasonable suspicion but did not concern itself with this question.
Well, actually, the district court actually made a finding that there was reasonable articulable suspicion of criminal activity. So, I mean, the issue was raised by the state and decided by the district court. So I sort of failed to see why it would not properly be before this court, frankly, especially when it's briefed, and especially we have sort of the odd procedural history where the district court was deciding the case under this court's decision in Edstrom, and we now know from the Supreme Court's decision in Edstrom that reasonable articulable suspicion continues to be the standard that should govern our de novo decision. So it would seem to me that that issue is properly before the court.
Agreed. So I want to make, I guess the summary of my argument is that because the constitutional violation led to the dog's alert, the alert cannot supply the probable cause to justify the warrant, and the evidence obtained from the search should be suppressed.
Can I ask you one question before your time's up? Let's assume that if this court were to disagree and to conclude that the dog sniff result was properly included in the probable cause statement and considered by the issuing magistrate, is it your position that there still isn't probable cause, or do you agree that with the dog sniff evidence there was probable cause for the warrant?
I would agree with the dog sniff evidence there's probable cause under Edstrom.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. You'll have time for rebuttal.
May it please the court, counsel John Schmidt, assistant Hennepin County attorney on behalf of the state of Minnesota. This court is bound by the Minnesota Supreme Court's decision in Edstrom, and unless and until the United States Supreme Court says otherwise, that is controlling for the Fourth Amendment and the Minnesota constitutional analysis. The facts of this case are...
So under Edstrom then, if an informant, confidential informant, knows where someone lives, you know, it's their neighbor, it's someone they're related to or whatever, it's reasonable suspicion, articulable suspicion, if they tell the police, person X is selling drugs from their home, here's where they live. And the only corroboration is, yep, that's where they live, or essentially. I mean, is that a reasonable articulable suspicion?
Yes, but looking at the specifics of the tip, both in Edstrom and in this case, they were aware that they were selling methamphetamine. The same drug in both cases.
Who was aware?
The confidential informant.
Right. So the confidential informant says, I'm aware they're selling drugs, and here's where they live. And the police corroborate where they live. Is that enough?
Yes. Under those circumstances, because it's just an indicia of reliability. So figuring out, all right, we have a tip that there's criminal activity going on. And I agree with Judge Larkin that it would be better to have corroboration of some criminal activity. But it's an additional of reliability. So figuring out, is this reliable or not? They go, and in Edstrom, they find out, they confirm the address, they confirm his car. The car is at the apartment building. His emergency contact is in apartment number 305. From that gives reliability, some indicia of reliability to say, this tip is reliable because we have verified a number of, although non-criminal activity, a number of portions of that information to figure out that, yes, we can go forward under reasonable articulable suspicion. And the facts in this case...
Is there any other case besides Edstrom that has such thin corroboration? Basically, the person is who the informant says he is and lives where the informant says she does.
Davis is very close to that as well. I mean, Edstrom... The argument
was a known informant. It was a private citizen informant.
That's right. Yeah. So there was more liability there.
This corroboration of informant's tip normally presents in the context of PC for a search warrant. There are some reasonable suspicion cases, but I mean, what do those reasonable suspicion cases tell us about the level of corroboration needed for an informant's tip?
It's quite low, and it can be
as compared to probable cause for a warrant?
Correct. To corroborate a unknown, the confidential informant's tip, it can be quite low, and it can be, the case law says, it can be legal activity that is corroborated. And that gets you to, so the corroboration of the tip is lower than reasonable articulable suspicion, but you need to corroborate
lower
that tip.
Probable cause. I'm sorry, it's lower than reasonable suspicion. Oh, the corroboration is.
To corroborate the tip, correct. Mm-hmm. That you have the tip of criminal activity. At that point, you are not allowed to conduct a dog search, the dog sniff, because you don't have reasonable articulable suspicion because it's uncorroborated at that point in time. Going forward and corroborating legal activity, where the person lives, that the car is there, showing a picture of the defendant or the suspect to the informant, and the suspect says, that's the person I saw selling drugs. And then here it's even greater because the police talk to the apartment manager. The apartment manager says, yes, this person lives in this apartment, and there has been police calls to this apartment in the past. Now, the police calls in the past may not be relevant, but it certainly shows that this person is there. And that is sufficient for the corroboration, which then gets you reasonable articulable suspicion to bring a dog in and conduct the sniff. Once the dog alerts, that gets you the probable cause to go get the warrant and come back and execute the warrant at a later date. And the Supreme Court's analysis in Edstrom is clear that we agree that there is reasonable articulable suspicion. The next paragraph, I believe, goes on to look at some of the factors of the reasonable articulable suspicion. But I have, as the state, I have tried to make concessions in the past, but it is the court's duty to still look into whether or not that factor is met. And so the court saying, yeah, Edstrom conceded this, but we agree is enough to say they agreed these facts, this tip, the corroboration on top of that was enough to get.
Well, they'll often say, or this court will often say, we assume without deciding, which kind of sends a clear message that we're not considering this, we're not deciding on the merits, we're presuming it for the purpose of our analysis.
Correct. And they did that actually in Davis, where they assumed without deciding the police entry into the building in Davis was valid without deciding that issue, and they left it open for another
day. Here's the thing. I don't see how the Supreme Court in Edstrom can say that we're going to keep applying the Davis standard, and the Davis standard is satisfied here when one of the prongs of the Davis standard is reasonable articulable suspicion of criminal activity.
Right.
I mean, how can the Supreme Court in Edstrom say we apply Davis here without actually believing that there was reasonable articulable suspicion? They couldn't do it.
They couldn't.
I suppose they can do anything, but logically it wouldn't make sense.
Right. I would hope they wouldn't do that. And if there was a question about reasonable articulable suspicion existing, they also could have remanded back to this court to consider that issue or done a remand to consider that. I suppose the district court in Edstrom did decide reasonable articulable suspicion existed, but they could have remanded back to this court to decide that issue, but they decided the whole thing and said Davis was met, reasonable articulable suspicion existed. Again, unless the U.S. Supreme Court reverses the Minnesota Supreme Court, that is the binding precedent for this analysis and for future dog sniffs. Even if the, as I said in the brief, the ion scan does not need to be addressed, even if the ion scan itself was suppressed, the dog sniff is enough for probable cause to get the warrant. Just as an aside, where Edstrom stands in terms of the cert petition. They did file a cert petition. I contended it was early because they didn't have jurisdiction. No final judgment has entered in Edstrom. The U.S. Supreme Court denied that cert petition. They still have a chance to file another cert petition once judgment enters. So
the current cert petition is done?
The current cert petition is done. It's been denied last Monday. They could have an opportunity to file a second cert petition once final judgment enters, which was my contention of that's when it is ripe. Unless the court has any other questions.
I'll just ask one more question. So I know we were talking about Weicker, which is an unpublished decision, but it quotes or it cites to Supreme Court decision from 1997, a matter of GM, and cites to the requirement it describes. That the record has to, to show reasonable suspicion based on an informant's tip, that it must, at a minimum, include information suggesting the informant is credible and obtained the information in a reliable way. Does Edstrom, is there inconsistency then between that latter clause and obtained the information in a reliable way? And Edstrom, which doesn't seem to describe how the information was obtained, it just describes corroboration that the person lived where the informant said he did.
Well, and I don't know that there's inconsistencies, because at least as I read that second clause, it goes to the police then cooperated in a reliable way. I'm not sure that it's about the informant's tip. And even if it is about the informant's tip, there was some testimony about the person saw them selling drugs. There wasn't anything about, you know, how they were in there,
in
what they were doing.
In the current case?
At least in Edstrom. There was testimony about being in the apartment and selling drugs. And that was, although the Supreme Court didn't address that one way or the other. I don't think that Weicker lowers the bar on that. It's still, the standard is still the indicia of reliability, which can be corroborated through legal activity, which is what happened here and which is what happened in Edstrom. Unless the court has any other questions, we'd ask that you affirm.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Rebuttal?
Thank you. I just have a brief point to make about the indicia of reliability. So the confidential informant in this case, you know, gave the tip, and all it says in the warrant is that they received information from a confidential informant. The police did corroborate, you know, where he lived, what his appearance was, the parking spot, but that does not mean that the confidential informant was reliable. It just means that the confidential informant knew where he lived, but it doesn't have any connection to the criminal activity. All of the corroboration was work done by the police and not by the confidential informant. We know nothing about what else the confidential informant knew.
Thank you. Thanks very much.